Joshua Kors returns to our program. He's a New York-based freelance journalist. He writes for The Nation, and he was with us about a month ago and told us the story, a sad, tragic, and hard-to-digest story about Army Specialist Jonathan Towne. Joshua Kors, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Good to be with you, Peter.
Thanks for following up with us on this, and I appreciate your diligence in pursuing this one case. Perhaps your work will help bring the services and the support that Jonathan Towne needs. But as we're learning, there are many, many cases across America of soldiers who've been seriously injured, return, and find that they don't get the services they need. And in fact, the military seems to be conspiring to deny them health care, follow-up mental health care, treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder, and other conditions that are clearly a direct result of their service to this nation.
That's right, and that was certainly the case with Jonathan Towne. He was very near a rocket explosion in Ramadi, Iraq, which left him largely deaf. He was given the Purple Heart for his wounds, but when he came back to America, it was time to discharge him. Instead of discharging him because of his deafness, they decided that his hearing loss was actually caused by a personality disorder.
A pre-existing one, right?
That's right.
Something that occurred prior to his deployment.
Before he even joined the military. Doing it that way, they were able to prevent him from collecting disability or medical benefits for the rest of his life. And, Peter, as you said, the importance of this story is that it goes so much farther than just John. 22,500 soldiers have been discharged from the military in the last 6 years due to personality disorder. Cheating those veterans out of their benefits is saving the military $12.5 billion. That's $8 billion in disability pay, $4.5 billion in medical care.
That's shameful. I'm sorry, I can't think of any other way to describe it.
Well, it's shameful to not just the people listening. I think some of the in Washington have woken up to this fact, and one of the important updates since last we spoke is that several senators, including Barack Obama, Barbara Boxer, and Joseph Lieberman, have now asked for an investigation of these personality disorder discharges.
Mm-hmm. And what stage is that at right now, Josh?
It's at the very beginning stages, but you know there is other Washington involvement. Representative Bob Filner, who is the head of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, has stepped in as well. He heard about John's case through an interview I did with him out of a Reno radio station.
Oh, yeah?
After that, we got off the phone and began speaking, and he has stepped in. The Dayton VA in Ohio, where John Towne lives, did a radical reversal. At first, they said they had nothing to do with him. He was obviously injured, you know, with the personality disorder before joining the Army. No chance at disability or medical benefits. After Filner received a phone call about Towne, everything changed on a dime. All of a sudden, the VA is offering him full medical care.
Well, I appreciate that. It's nice that they can respond to the threat of exposure of the next Walter Reed. At the same time, we probably, you cited 22,500 cases, and we don't have enough members of Congress with enough time in the day to personally intervene on behalf of every individual who has been denied rightful benefits through the process you described.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, they are definitely trying to avoid a PR nightmare. I think they're a touch too late for that. But the thousands of other soldiers without direct representation in the Congress really are out of luck at this point. I think that's why the eye of the hurricane has circled over Surgeon General Gail Pollack. Her office said they were totally unaware of the personality disorder issue. Then they were presented a stack of cases, including Specialist Towne. They spent 5 months on it. did what Ms. Pollack described as a complete and thorough review and decided that all of those cases were properly diagnosed.
Ow.
Including the idea that Specialist Town lost his hearing from a personality disorder.
Now, excuse me, but the only personality I know who's lost his hearing is Rush Limbaugh, who was doing massive quantities of OxyContin on a daily basis. This is, I mean, it strains the credibility of the process. It's like saying that his head injuries were, you know, caused by stubbing his toe in high school.
That's right. I mean, in the 7 months I've been looking into this situation, never once did I come across medical facts in which normal people could disagree. No one would think that hearing loss could be caused by personality disorder. No one would think that in the case of Peter Dykstra that you would have a bilateral hernia caused by a personality disorder. It's just case after case of clear-cut misdiagnoses. And the Surgeon General's involvement really becomes interesting when you look at the details. I did a touch more reporting about her complete and thorough review,
mm-hmm.
and found out in the 5 months they did this review, never once did they interview a single soldier. What they did do is go back to the doctor's offices where these original false diagnoses were made and ask them whether they got it right the first time. The offices there said, yep, we did it right, and they considered that a thorough and closed case.
Wow. Oh, I mean, I'm laughing, but it's just so sad that they think they can play these games and get away with it, and the soldiers are paying an incredible price for this. I mean, this is a war that has been waged on a series of blank checks with tax cuts for the rich, open-ended budgets for the military up until the Congress on this supplemental started to put some restrictions or strings attached to it. But we've had a series of blank checks for everyone except the cannon fodder that we sent to the front lines. And I say that phrase, and I realize it could inflict pain on people, but it reflects to me the attitude that the military must have to these individual service members if they can look them in the eye, go through these boards, these medical review boards, and come up with these phony diagnoses that deny benefits and save the government money.
Well, what makes it even more interesting is that the results of these reviews are jumbled and mixed. As one of my sources said, they are doing everything they can to cover up, and they're doing a lousy job.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to Ms. Pollack's statement about this thoughtful and thorough review, which turned up no false diagnoses, I also received a statement from Lieutenant Colonel Bob Tallman, a spokesman for the Army. Tallman went even further in his memo. He said that they went back and reviewed the cases from the last 4 years at Fort Carson, where Specialist Town was based, and found that all of those cases were properly diagnosed. I called Colonel Tallman and asked him how they could consider this review thoughtful and thorough if they didn't interview a single soldier. And he told me, well, he really didn't think that they could. And he said, let me go you one step further. I didn't write this memo, and I have no knowledge of its contents. He then directed me to the person who did write the memo, Cynthia Vaughn, the Chief of Public Affairs at the Surgeon General's office. On my 21st phone call to Ms. Vaughn, I finally broke through and was able to get an answer about this review, and I think your listeners will be quite struck by what she had to say.
Go ahead.
She said that the reason they didn't interview a single soldier was because these diagnoses occurred a few years ago, and the Surgeon General's office didn't feel that the soldiers would have any medically valid information to share this many years afterwards. Now, certainly Specialist Town would remember if he had been deaf before joining the Army. Certainly his commanders at Fort Carson might have remembered if he was too ill to serve in the first place, when in reality he earned 12 medals for his performance. Again, we talk about straining the credibility. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens from here. As you know, in the wake of the Walter Reed scandal, the Pentagon took two actions. They accepted the resignation of Surgeon General Kevin Kiley, and they hired the public relations firm LMW Strategies with a $100,000 no-bid contract to put a positive spin on the Walter Reed scandal.
Who's LMW? That's the first I've heard of them.
Yes, they are an East Coast-based public relations firm, which is now working in conjunction with the Pentagon to handle press crises like this.
So they're damage control specialists.
That's exactly it. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see what type of damage control is put into place now with Surgeon General Pollack and this $12.5 billion scandal.
Now, Pollack is new in the job. Why wouldn't she take the opportunity here to, you know, start with a clean slate? And, you know, there's very little downside for her to correct the problems of her predecessor.
You know, I can't really answer that. I think everybody in her office has really just been a cold shoulder to all of these wounded veterans. I think of my conversation with Elsbeth Ritchie, a top nurse with the Surgeon General there. I had her on the phone and had one question for her. Did she acknowledge that these personality disorder misdiagnoses were occurring? She said to me, well, you'll have to talk to my PR people to schedule an interview with me. I said, well, that's the only question I have. We're both on the phone right now. She said, well, you're going to have to talk to them. I said, but Ms. Ritchie, that's the only question. And at that point, she hung up on me.
And I'm sure she was thinking, my answer is like cotton candy. It must be spun at a very high rate of speed first. And then it's real sweet and it goes down easy. Joshua Kors, we're going to take a break and return. Stand by, please. If you have a question or comment for Joshua Kors, the journalist, you can call us now, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. That's our number here, toll-free, at the Peter B. Collins Show. That's Roy Zimmerman. Caught his act over the weekend. And if you go to RoyZimmerman.com, you can hear that music, find out how to order a copy of the CD. Now, satire there produces a laugh, and you're entitled to it. But consider that the chicken hawks of the Bush administration, people like Dick Cheney, who had 5 deferments and other priorities that prevented him from serving during the Vietnam era, these are the people who've devised the strategies to send our soldiers into a pointless war and occupation in Iraq, and then to cruelly deny them benefits when they are injured, damaged, and return. And as Scott Dick, who contributes to our program every week, has pointed out, the last World War I veterans are still with us. So consider how long our nation will have to care for those who have suffered as a result of serving in Iraq and then had that compounded as they returned to denials of benefits, to monkey trials of their medical records that really produce only one outcome, and that is to cut costs for the Pentagon. Joshua Kors has been delving into this story. You can read his work at thenation.com or in The Nation magazine. And, Joshua, let's take a moment here to just define the manner in which the military does this. You described the Army's Separations Manual, Regulation 635-200, Chapter 5-13, Separation Because of Personality Disorder. Tell us how this works.
That's right. The 513 separation is the key here. Soldiers will come back wounded, and they will go to their doctor seeking treatment. The doctor, in many of the cases I looked at, will say, hey, you know, we know you don't have a personality disorder, but why don't we give it to you? This will keep you from going back to Iraq, and you can be out in about 5 days. If these soldiers had been properly diagnosed, they'd go to a medical board, which takes about 6 months. There's another bit of leverage they can use on these soldiers. When they're wounded and don't think they can properly serve, that means they can't properly watch the back of their fellow soldiers. And so doctors can say to them, well, you know, if we get you out real quick, that's going to be better for your fellow soldiers. They're going to be safer when they have someone in your shoes who can guard them with greater strength. And at that point, the soldiers think, you know, it's a good idea. It's better for these soldiers I care so much about. I'll take it. It's only in their final hours in uniform they find out that accepting a personality disorder discharge means that they'll never get disability pay, never get medical benefits from the VA, and they'll also have to give back their signing bonus, so that in their final hour on base, many of these wounded veterans find out they actually owe the Army several thousand dollars.
Jeez.
And, you know, Peter, we talked before about the clear-cut nature of these cases. I mentioned Richard Dykstra, who had suffered a bilateral hernia in Iraq, which was later determined to be the result of a personality disorder.
I have no idea how you do that.
I'm now looking into the case of a soldier who damaged the lens of his eyeball in Iraq. That, too, was decided to be the result of a personality disorder.
Let's take a moment and describe William Wooldridge, Joshua.
Yeah, Wooldridge was another very difficult case. He was in Iraq driving equipment when a man pushed his young daughter into the streets, perhaps a moment of insanity. Wooldridge described it as a moment of psychological warfare. He tried to swerve his truck but was unable to, and ran over and killed that young girl. She was just about the age of his young daughter back in Arkansas. When he came home to Arkansas, he was haunted by the ghost of this young girl, who would ask him why he had killed her. The Army decided that those schizophrenic-type delusions were caused by a personality disorder he had before joining the Army at all, a notion which just infuriated him. He said, before going to Iraq, I was just fine. And I think the detail there is that it's all in the medical paperwork. Each of the soldiers is screened twice before serving in Iraq, once when they join the Army and once before deploying. And in all of the cases I looked at, these soldiers, by the Army's own medical records, were perfectly healthy in both screenings. It's only when they come back and seek benefits that the personality disorder is discovered.
And you quote William Wooldridge, "They put me out on the street to rot, and if I had left things like they were, there would have been no way I could have survived. I would have had to take myself out or had someone do it for me," he says. The way they use personality disorder to diagnose and discharge, he says, quote, "it's like a mental rape. That's the only way I can describe it."
Yeah, and his notion of suicide, I think, is quite acute. There is a high suicide rate of soldiers coming back. I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with that. And that goes hand in glove with this personality disorder scandal as well. I think of the case of Chris Mosier, who came back with schizophrenic-type delusions, was given 5 days of treatment because he was determined to have a personality disorder. And when he was let out in the street, he came back to his family's home in Iowa, posted a note on the door saying the Iraqis were after him there in Des Moines, and he had to save the family, and then shot himself.
Oh, boy.
And it's so hard for these soldiers to hear because it's still going on.
Yeah, Joshua, I got to stop here. We're out of time. I want to mention for our North Coast listeners, Carl Jung and the veterans are holding a stand down for vets. It'll be on June 8th at the fairgrounds in Humboldt County. And coming up next, we're going to talk to an Iraq veteran who suffers from PTSD, Mike Ergo. Joshua Kors, thank you for joining us again today, and update us as needed, will you?
Thank you, Peter. I will.
Read about it at thenation.com. I'm Peter B. Collins.